Mormon Stories Podcast is made possible through the financial contributions of its listeners. To keep it alive and available to future generations, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. Let's now make sort of a major shift. You've mentioned very briefly some LGBT themes, and you talked a little bit about being openly gay. What we haven't talked about at all is your experience with these types of issues growing up in the church at Word Perfect, and then your work now as it relates to Proposition 8 and activism on behalf of the LGBT community. So before we talk about that, what are your first recollections of feeling that you were different?
You know, I've always felt kind of different, even when I was a kid. I did things differently. My grandmother, when I was like 9 or 10 years old, she'd call me Bruce Ann, which was very embarrassing. And I don't know if she saw some things or just was trying to tease me or what, but I didn't take it as a compliment. I always knew I was different. I didn't really understand it. And then you get into junior high and all the boys start talking about all the girls, and that just wasn't what interested me. But, you know, you play along with you don't want to get teased or anything, so you play along. It gets harder in high school. I mean, I was never good in athletics. I know you don't have to be gay, and I know there are gay athletes that are wonderful athletes. So there's no real parallel there. But at the time, I thought that has my whole problem with not being athletic is the same as all this other stuff, even though they're not related. But it's you start realize that you would rather spend time with the boys than with the girls, and the attraction is not just buddy buddy. It goes beyond that. So you have to keep it in check, and you have to be very, very careful. You live in fear. You just live in fear.
Do you remember the first moment where you? I mean, this would have been what, late 60s, early 70s, where you were an adolescent.
This is early 60s.
Early 60s. Okay.
I graduated from high school in 66.
So you're a...
So in when I was in high school, and I had a real crush on a couple of guys. I never, ever told anyone. I never dared. I certainly wouldn't tell them.
Did you have the language to even... think about the word gay or homosexual?
No, I mean, I didn't know. Nobody, the word gay had not come up. I mean, nobody, you mean you see Liberace on TV or whoever, but nobody really talked about it. It was like the hidden topic. It was the thing that people don't speak about. So you just keep it. It's just.
So you didn't have a vocabulary for it, did you?
No, not really.
Yeah,
I didn't know anybody else who was gay. I didn't know anybody. I mean, I know now there were some, but they were like me. They were scared to death of being found out, of being, that somebody might. I mean, I certainly never did anything about it. I never let on to anyone.
How did you think of yourself? Did you give yourself a label?
Oh, I thought I was an awful person. I tried to be such a good boy. I tried to do everything that I was supposed to do. And I thought, oh my God, if anybody ever really knew what was in my head, I would be hated. I would be shunned. It is a world of fear, constant fear, that somebody's going to figure out what you're really thinking and you're going to be condemned because of your thoughts. And you try to control it. You do everything. I did everything I could knew how to do to make it go away, so those thoughts would change.
And all you're thinking is, I'm liking boys.
I'm liking
you don't
boys.
Even have a categorical label for it at the time. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
You
wouldn't I think mean, by I'm the gay. By the time I got to college, yeah, I said I knew I could say, well, I'm gay or I'm homosexual. I mean, I knew those words. But with the first one in junior high, you don't know those words. I mean, you don't. I didn't. I'm sure kids do now. Thank God, but I didn't.
Okay, so you're just thinking I'm attracted to these boys.
And I'm weird.
Yeah.
I'm really weird. I must be sick.
And you try to talk to anybody or?
No. I didn't tell anybody.
You're fearful of eternal ramifications, physical harm?
I just thought, well, if I can control this and if I do everything that God tells me I should do, I'll fix it. It'll go away. And
did you ever say, Mom, I feel like I'm different, or Dad, I feel like I'm different, or
mm-mm.
You can't ever do that?
I couldn't.
Did you ever try and be more masculine or be more boy-like or, you know?
No.
No?
No. In fact, when I was in high school, my senior year of high school, I had a rock and roll band. And I guess if I tried to be like anybody, it was like Mick Jagger, which is not masculine. I mean, he's not gay, of course, but he's not somebody I would say is a real masculine entity, man. Right. I don't want to offend Mick Jagger. That's who I wanted to be like.
Right. And so do you remember praying or, in those high school years trying to?
Oh, yeah. You asked me earlier, did I pray for a testimony? No, I prayed to not have those feelings. I prayed and prayed and prayed and prayed to not have those feelings. That I would have the same feelings. I would like girls. That I would not be gay. That I wouldn't be homosexual.
You had those prayers in high school.
Mm-hmm. And when I got to BYU, it in some ways got worse, because I mean, I know there were guys that I knew at BYU who were gay, but I didn't dare talk to them about it. Didn't dare do anything about it.
Did people in high school make fun of you or notice there was something different or treat you in a different way or persecute you?
Well, I mean, I got teased. You always get teased to some extent in high school. I got teased because I was so bad in sports and I was always like the last person to ever be picked for anything. Which is hard. I mean, I feel sorry for these kids, but, you know, I think you go into pick teams and you're always consistently the last one. It's such emotionally distressing. But I was always a good student. I was a good musician. I was always really good in music and I was always really good in school. So I had those ups on them. So they could tease me on the baseball field or the football field, but I could hold up my test score and see, ha ha.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So.
Was the word sissy used back then?
Not like it is now.
No. So there's really no epithet or bad word.
No, I wasn't called a fag or a puff or at least not to my face.
Okay. So then BYU, you start realizing that there is such a thing as homosexuality.
Yeah. And I will admit that one of the reasons I went on a mission was to, because I thought, okay, so if I go on a mission and I prove to God that I can be a good missionary and I can do everything he says for 2 years, that he'll take this away.
Let's explore the stereotypes for just a second. Some of the stereotypes I've heard is, number one, abused as a child in some way.
That was never true. Not at all.
Number two, a domineering mother or something, some weird thing about the parents and gender and relationships.
No, I had a wonderful, feminine, loving mother. I had a very good, masculine father who worked hard. He knew how to have a good time, but he certainly was not gay in any way.
Right. And that maybe it comes to inappropriate exploration, maybe even sexual exploration as a child.
Mm-mm. Nothing. I wish. I wish I'd been a little more adventurous when I was a teenager, but I wasn't at all.
Okay. And, you know, no other trauma or any, I don't know what the other stereotypes are. Are there any I'm leaving out about what causes it?
Well, I mean,
it?
People always say, "Was it? Is it nature or nurture?" Well, I have two older brothers that are very, very much heterosexual. I have three very heterosexual sisters. I don't know how people, they just want to find some other reason to blame it or to, you know, why are some people born left-handed? I can remember as a first grader, when I was in the first grader, being left-handed was such a bad thing that if kids would come in the first grade and start to write with their left hand, the teacher would come around with a ruler and slap their hand with a ruler and make them write with their right hand because she did not want them to be left-handed.
Wow. So, yeah. Okay, so none of those stereotypes fit for you, and certainly it wasn't either abuse or inappropriate sexual conduct on your behalf.
No.
In fact, you were trying to keep this from being a reality in your life.
Yeah.
Everything you could.
Everything I could.
Okay. So at BYU, I don't know when the miracle of forgiveness was written. That clearly spoke out harshly against it. Were you aware of the church's position on homosexuality while at BYU?
Yeah. And then, after I got married, I got asked to be in the bishopric, and I was the first counselor in a bishopric. And so when you're in the bishopric, you're privy to certain letters that come from the first presidency to bishops. And, you know, I wrote right in there. I read what Spencer W. Kimball had to say about homosexuality, the awful, vile things he had to say. This is a prophet of God that I revered at the time. And Bruce R. McConkie, some of the things he said. I
mean, the Mormon doctrine.
Yeah. I mean, and I thought, well, you know, I had Bruce R. McConkie on a pedestal because of he was such a scholar in scriptures. But then he would stand up and say those things. And I'm saying, no, I'm not a bad person. You know, I'm not what you're describing. And it just didn't make sense to me.
Right. So let's go back just a bit. So you go on a mission, and on your mission, you said part of it was with the intent of making a bargain with God, that if you were the best missionary you could be. And so did you have those prayers on your mission?
Oh, yeah. I know I had some missionary companions, not companions, but some missionaries in districts that were gay. I know it. Right. I'm looking back at it now.
Sure. But were you pained by this on your mission? Was it something that you just compartmentalized and didn't think about?
I just pushed it aside.
Pushed it aside.
I mean, I had thoughts. I had one accident. I have to throw in a little joke here. I had one accident on my mission where I was driving and I rear-ended the car in front of me. And I rear-ended the car in front of me because I was looking at some cute Italian boy walking down the street. So, I mean, you know, it's there. It's always there. But I wasn't just like other missionaries control their heterosexual desires when they're on a mission. And I just controlled my homosexual desires when I was on a mission. I just didn't let them come up.
So since the mission was sort of this spiritual peak for you, did you think I'm gay? Did you think I'm homosexual by that point? And if you did, how did you reconcile that with your spiritual beliefs and the gospel and the plan of salvation? Or were you just like in denial? Were you self-identified?
I was probably in denial. I mean, I kept believing that I could either hide it or I could fix it. I really felt that, you know, I still felt that if somebody really knew what I was thinking, that I would be hated, I would be shunned, I would lose everything. Because, you know, when you're a Mormon, the church is much more than just church. It's your life. If you get excommunicated, you get thrown out of your church, you get really kind of put off to the corner from your family, your friends, everything. It's like, and they do that so that you beg forgiveness and come back crawling back.
Right. So you were just hiding it and pushing it down.
Yeah.
not constantly tormented about it, just kind
not
of
not constantly,
like,
but not constantly, but yes, constantly. Because, I mean, it got to the point where the feelings became more intense, and you try to suppress them more and try to suppress them more, and you feel like you're a liar. You feel like you're living a lie. And you're a huge hypocrite. My dad always taught me about the evils of hypocrisy. And I felt like I was like the world's biggest hypocrite.
So, back then?
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you got home from your mission and you realized, you probably realized at some point your feelings hadn't changed?
Yeah.
Was that?
And that's, there was a point while I was the director of the marching band at BYU before I got married. And I went and talked to a friend of mine who worked in the music department, and I knew he was gay. He had a wife and a family, but I knew, I mean, I watched him, I looked at him, I knew he was gay. So I finally had the courage to tell somebody that I was gay, and I chose him. And he sat there in his office and listened to me. And then after I told him, he said, "Well, if you ever want to fool around, I'm available." And that just, like, I said, "So is this what it's going to be like? So I can't tell anybody I'm gay unless I want to sleep with him."
Did you experimented at all?
Mm-mm.
So you're how old at this point?
I was probably 25, 24, between 24 and 26.
And never had experimented, never...
No, when I got married, I was a virgin, total virgin in every way.
Mm. And this is a BYU professor who you talked to?
It wasn't a professor.
Just someone who worked there.
Yeah, he worked there.
And you were, so how'd you feel when he said that to you?
No, it was kind of disgusting. It was appalling, actually.
Mm.
He actually said, before he said that, he said, "Well, you know, you should get married. You should get married. It's nice to have a wife to go home to and your kids." And later he was arrested for having sex with guys in the toilets at the Wilkins Center at BYU.
Hmm. For living that double life.
Yeah. And I mean, again, like, he's a good man. He is a good man. But, you know, he thought he could have it both ways. He thought he could be married and go to church and do all these things, da, 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 and then just kind of fool around on the side. Well, no.
Hmm. So did you ever talk to a bishop prior to marriage about this issue?
Yeah. Before I got married and I had my interview with my stake president to go to the temple and get married. And I told it basically in so many words, I told the stake president that I had feelings for guys. And his recommendation was to get married and love my wife and everything would be taken care of.
That'd fix it.
Yeah.
That would ungay you.
It would ungay me.
Were you aware of the electroshock therapy and the rip, you know,
actually,
the
I wasn't. I wasn't. I mean, I've learned about that since, how disgusting and awful that had to be. I never had to do that. I never went through that.
Tell our listeners what happened just really briefly. You were there, right?
It was during those years.
Yeah.
Yeah. They would basically put electrodes on you in certain places, including your genitals, and show you sexual porn, basically. And they would show you gay porn. And if you got aroused, I mean, and then they basically shocked you. You were either asked to shock yourself to stimulate you, or they would shock you. And it was horrible. Not only was it traumatizing, it was emotionally and physically damaging to those people. They did that too. Mm. To make them change.
Right, right. And that was at BYU in the 70s.
It wasn't just at BYU. I mean, it did happen at BYU, right, in the 70s.
But it was nationwide?
Oh, it happened everywhere.
Okay.
It still happens.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It still happens. I still know guys whose parents have gone to their ministers, and the minister says, "Well, we should get him in this program, and they'll ungay him."
Does it ever work?
No.
Doesn't work.
Are you kidding? No.
Okay. So the stake president tells you to just get married.
Yeah.
Did you were you ever hesitant? Did you kind of say, will this work? Should I do this?
Oh, I was very hesitant.
Had you been romantic at all with your fiance or?
Not really. I mean, I loved her as much as you can love a friend, and I still do. And I certainly don't regret. I have four wonderful, wonderful sons. And I mean, I can't imagine my life without them, but, I know I also caused them excruciating pain when I left the family. So, I mean, how do you juggle that?
Sure. So I've heard about gay men, maybe gay women, when they get married and it's time to be intimate, it's a very hard thing.
It is. Was for me.
Did you envision that pre-marriage and think, can I do this? Can I pull this off?
I guess I was in denial then. I thought I could. I did. I have four kids.
Right. And did you tell your wife beforehand?
No.
She didn't know.
No.
Did you feel like that was
hypocritical?
So you kind of felt a little before you felt guilty that you maybe
Yeah. I mean, I knew I was going into the marriage with a big, big lie in the package.
But your stake president told you to do it.
Yeah. He did.
Yeah. And, but you felt confident with priesthood authority backing you up that God would work it out.
Yeah. I would change that okay. Once I, and you know, when my eldest son was born, I thought, well, you know, this is so wonderful. These are the kinds of experiences that are going to really keep me, you know, change me and
fix you.
Yeah.
This is going to be kind of personal. Was it hard to be intimate? Was it, I mean, maybe there's some flexibility in a spectrum there of what people are and aren't comfortable. Like, I'm trying to imagine being with a man, and that's hard for me, the way I'm wired, I guess.
I was never intimate with my wife. God bless her. I mean, I was never intimate the way she deserved to have a man be intimate with her. When I met my first boyfriend, and when I kissed him, it was like an explosion. It was fireworks going off. I say, oh, here's the difference. And so it's. I mean, if you have this physical attraction to somebody, then the intimacy is easy. If not, it's. I mean, I'm not saying it's a game or it's a chore, but it's not. It just doesn't flow. It just doesn't flow.
So for you, it was just kind of functional. You had children to have, and so you just kind of.
I mean, I don't want to make it say like it's just like a machine. No, I mean, but it wasn't the depth of affection that I am able to give to a man. I loved my wife. I still love my wife, but I fell in love with a man.
Right. Right. Yeah. So, how did you go from being a happily married, heterosexual, LDS man in a bishopric, executive, to things kind of changing? What were the steps to that happening?
Well, I met a young man in the Netherlands. Very innocently, and we fell in love. And you know, that's something you don't plan.
How old were you?
34.
So you're like six,
it was
seven.
It was after my last son was born.
6-7 years into your marriage.
Yeah. I think 7 years in my marriage.
And were you feeling unfulfilled? Was it preceded by a feeling of like, this isn't working and this isn't fulfilling me and I'm not happy? Or were, had you just...
No, actually. No, I mean, it was just kind of the same. Things were just kind of rolling on and going on. And I was in Amsterdam coming home from a business trip. And, you know, you don't plan things like that. It just happens. You don't plan to fall in love. You don't. I don't care if you're gay or straight. You don't plan to fall in love. It happens. If people say, oh, you, this is a choice. I didn't go out one day and say, I'm going to fall in love with the man now. I've done the woman thing. Now I'm going to fall in love with the man. It's just bizarre how people think that that's how it happens. But that certainly turned things on its end. That's when I first told my wife. That's when I told my business colleagues.
Just that you were in love.
That I was gay. Hmm. That's what I first told them, that I was gay. I didn't dare say I'm in love. I said I'm gay. And I did things that were probably kind of silly at the time. I mean, when you first fall in love, I don't care if you're 18 or 80, when you first really fall in love, you're kind of silly, you're kind of giddy, you do silly things. And I did silly things, but
was it before the marriage ended, or
yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, then it's just started years of working through things. And
how'd your wife feel when you told her?
I'm sure she was brokenhearted. I'm sure it just had to rip her apart. I can't even imagine how painful that would be.
Did you have to tell your sons?
Yeah, she made me. She made me. Good for her.
Because you were hesitant to even want to do that.
Well, I didn't tell him right away. I didn't tell him for several years because I kept living at home trying to work things out. I kind of led a double life for a few years. I lived at home and spent time with my boyfriend when I wasn't at home, which I don't recommend to anyone.
Yeah. Were these the hardest years of your life, maybe?
They were hard. They were really hard. But I guess it made me really more of a fighter, because kids shouldn't have to go through that. Kids, young people should not have to go through what I went through. They shouldn't have to live in fear of just being who they are. People should not get married for the wrong reason. They should not get married to please their parents or their church or their society. They should get married because they want to. To hell with everybody else. And when two people make a commitment to be with each other, then they should make that freely and openly and really have it, you know, because that's what they really want to do. And they just not be, because they feel compelled to do that. So those were really hard years. It came to a point where I had to make really some really tough decisions. And that's when I really stood up to the plate, in my opinion. And I did three things that were all really hard. I broke up with my boyfriend. We were in London and I just said goodbye. I said, I can't do this. I said goodbye. I came back to Orem, and within a few months, I moved out from my family. And within a few months of that, I wrote a letter to the church. I maybe even did that before I moved out. I wrote a letter to the church and talked to my bishop and took my name off, just took my name off the records of the church. Anyway, I did all of that within 6 months. But I broke up with my boyfriend first because I said, everything else I do, I have to do for me. And nobody can ever say, you did this for him. And nobody can. I did it for my own happiness. And those were really hard decisions, but they were the right decisions.
Do you remember the year approximately?
The time I did this, I think the time I did this was the late 80s.
This is pre-Ellen, pre, you know.
Oh, yeah. This is in the late 80s. This is before, this is way before Ellen DeGeneres and, this is before Elton John came out, for heaven's sakes. I mean, yeah.
And you came out, I mean, I remember at BYU knowing that there was some executive at WordPerfect who was gay and thinking, oh, that's horrible and oh, that's weird. And
yeah, you know, and by 1990, it was known. I had stopped living the double life. By 1990, it was known that Bruce Bashan was gay. I started getting anonymous hate emails from my own employees. And I started getting emails and letters from people saying, well, you know, WordPerfect's having a problem now, but if you were straight and you live a straight life, just none of this would have happened. Well, I was gay and had a boyfriend when WordPerfect was going up.
Oh, right, right, right.
So the only people who didn't, I mean, my wife knew, the people at WordPerfect knew. So these were just hateful, mean accusations and letters and emails from people. And none of them would even sign their name.
But it's got to be hard in the late 80s, early 90s in Utah to come out as gay.
It's never easy anywhere, but it was hard, yeah.
Did you feel the weight of the world on your shoulders?
Actually, I felt a huge relief. It was such a relief to actually not have that lie anymore. To actually say, yeah, I am gay. And not, I was in a unique position and I was in a good position. I knew I couldn't be fired. I knew I had plenty of money. I knew everybody could desert me if they wanted to and I could still survive. And most kids can't do that. But it made me more determined. As I said before, young people, nobody should have to do that. Nobody should have to live a lie because these things are forced upon them by other people who don't really understand who they are. They have no desire to even understand who they are. All they want to do is tell them what not to be.
Right. Right. Did you get to tell your parents?
My mother knew. I had a conversation with my father less than a week before he died, where I basically told him. I told him. He knew. When he died, he knew, because he had a conversation with my older brother about how hurt he was that I had to go through all of that alone and didn't feel like I could go to him and talk. He felt really bad that I felt like I couldn't go to him and talk to him openly about it. And when I think about it, I should have, you know, if I just kind of put two and two together. My dad was a musician for 50 years. You're not a musician anywhere in the world and not know gay people.
Right.
So I know he knew gay people. I know now he would have had no problem with it at all. I could have confided in him. I could have confided in him before I confided in my mother, actually. My mother had a problem with it until she got really sick and she saw firsthand how annoying and not really loving the church can be, although she was a faithful Mormon to the end. But she understood. The end, by the end of her life. She felt bad. She felt really bad. She felt sad that I couldn't have a full life with my kids. And I just said, you know, I'd rather have an honest life with my kids than what you consider a full life.
How do you feel like you were treated, just all your ward members and friends and the bishopric members? And I mean, you'd been an active, devout member of the church.
My bishop at the time was actually really great about it. He's a great man. And when I see him on the street, I still have warm feelings for him. Because, you know, when you submit your papers to have your name taken off, you have to go through a couple of interviews. You can't just say, I don't want to do this anymore. You have to talk to the bishop. You have to write a letter. You have to go back and talk to the bishop again before he actually okays it. And I remember at that final interview, and I said, you cannot tell my wife. You cannot tell anyone. And he honored that. He says, I hope you don't ever regret leaving the church. And I said, Bishop, I'm not leaving the church. The church left me years ago. So it was an experience that made me a lot stronger, taught me a lot. Not one I would wish on anyone else.
How did you untangle your spiritual and religious beliefs once you came out?
Well, when I came out, then I started questioning a lot of other things, and so I thought, so now by the time I left the church, I had come to grips with the reality that the church is just wrong on this. They're just plain wrong. If they're wrong on this, then maybe they're wrong on other things. So I started reading and reading and reading a lot. And
church history?
Well, which version? Which year? You want the 1850 version or the 1900 version or the 1950 version or the 1980 version? Which version of Mormon history do you want? And do you want the Mormon Church's version, or do you want a historian's version? They're very different. And I watched the way the Mormon Church treated the blacks. And how when I was a missionary, I was taught that, you know, blacks are a curse to the world. The descendants of Cain, and the Lord put a curse on them, don't have anything to do with them. And then when the revelation came down, I thought, it's very interesting, because the church is suddenly very, very important in Brazil, and it's hard to find very many Brazilians who don't have at least some African blood in them. They're really trying to make the church grow in Brazil and other places. And the African continent is ripe for Mormon missionaries. So let's do it now.
It felt convenient to you?
Oh, absolutely convenient. Mm-hmm. And besides a lot of the political pressure back in the United States to do it, they're getting a lot of pressure, political pressure, back here.
Right.
To do it.
But I know a lot of, and this has been one of the most bewildering things to me, I know gay men today who admit they're gay, who are open about it, but who are as devout and believing in the church as they were before they came out. So,
well, to them, I would just say, question. I would just say, so you're still gonna believe in a church that openly hates you and fights you and discriminates against you openly? That went on this awful, awful rampage to overturn the marriage rights in California, to take marriage equality away from citizens of the United States. This wasn't a religious battle. Nobody in California was fighting to have the Mormon Church have temple weddings or anything like that. That was never the issue. We weren't fighting the Mormon Church, but the Mormon Church decided to fight us and take those rights away. And they still want to believe in that? Fine. People are, if they're free, I will honor that. People want to believe whatever they want to believe. I believed it. I believed it hook, line, and sinker. I believed it.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to discuss it with others, please check us out online at mormonstories.org. If you want to find other friends, family members, former missionary companions, or ward members who approach Mormonism like you, consider adding me, John DeLynn, as your Facebook friend. This may seem like a strange idea, but many of my closest friends have discovered that they are not alone in their thoughts or feelings or family or even a ward situation through discovering mutual Facebook friends. Finally, to keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider a donation at mormonstories.org. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton.